You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
We got a power pack show today. Gary Parrish of CBS Sports is going to be with us to talk about Hunter Yurecek's comments earlier this week at the Little Rock Touchdown Club. Anthony Christensen is going to be in studio talking about the Razorback basketball schedule that was announced yesterday. And we're going to end the show with Jonah Dillon from the Commercial Appeal in Memphis talking about this weekend's football game between the Razorbacks and the Tigers. First, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
The headline is Arkansas AD Hunter Yurecek frustrated with state of recruiting suggests breaking rules might be needed. The columnist at CBSSports.com is Gary Parrish, and he joins us. Gary, when you heard Hunter Yurecek's comments at the Little Rock Touchdown Club earlier this week, what were your thoughts?
Not that I'm a psychic, but I kind of predicted we were going to end up in this spot. It was interesting as the House settlement was taking effect and, as some described it, reshaping college athletics, I was just always skeptical that this was actually going to fix the problems. I was more of the opinion it was going to just create different problems. We were going to trade in one set of issues for another. And as we sit here, like I wrote, less than 3 months later, that is crystal clear true. And among the biggest pieces of evidence to it is that an SEC athletic director earlier this week very publicly suggested that he doesn't believe some of his competitors are following the rules, and it has, at least the rules as he understands them, and it has led to him wondering out loud, again, in a very public way, if it's time for his university to start doing things he's not comfortable with and things he doesn't even think they're supposed to be doing. But if nobody's getting caught, nobody seems to care, and everybody else is doing it, then we are at a competitive disadvantage if we're the ones driving, to borrow his analogy, 55 while everybody else is going 65. So I'm not surprised that we got here. Was a little surprised to see an athletic director talk about it so publicly. But more than anything, it's just a reminder that everything we thought the House settlement was going to fix, it's not going to actually fix anything. It's just going to give us new problems to talk about. So now here we are.
He talks about driving in the third lane, which I took to mean kind of a gray area, an area of, is this right? Is it wrong? Is it permissible? From what you understand, what's happening right now out there in the recruiting world, what do you think that third lane looks like?
The third lane, as I interpret it, is a lane in which people are getting very creative. Or even worse than that, if you'll accept the word worse, from your perspective, doing things that they absolutely know they should not be doing. In other words, when I talk to college basketball coaches right now, here's what they tell me. GP, if I'm being honest, I don't even know how much money I have to spend in revenue sharing. I don't know what NIL deals are going to be approved and not approved. And so when I'm talking to young people right now and their agents, I tell them that anybody giving you definitive answers is probably out over their skis a little bit, and I'm not comfortable doing that. Let's circle back when we had some more information, and because right now we don't have enough to do a deal. So that's one conversation coaches are having with players. But these same players and same agents are having different conversations with different coaches, and these coaches are acting like, in some cases, the House settlement never even came into play. They're acting like the rules are still the rules we were operating with prior to July 1st, and that if I want to offer you a $5 million NIL deal, I can offer that to you. What Hunter, I think, is suggesting is that we all know we're not supposed to be doing that right now, but other schools are doing that, and if we don't do it, I fear we will continue to fall further behind. So what are some examples that other coaches are using? Here's what I heard that I thought was just creative. And I'd like to see, what the NIL Go department, how they would handle something like this. They're very clear in the way they write this, that they have to approve any NIL deal worth at more than $600. It has to be approved. It will encounter scrutiny. And if it doesn't make sense in any sort of traditional way for what a marketing deal might look like, it will be denied and the student athlete would not be able to accept that money. So here's what one coach, if you're talking about, let's get in the third lane and get creative and figure this out. Here's what one coach said to me. Okay, so any deal worth more than $600 has to be approved. What that suggests is any deal below $600 is perfectly fine. So what if I can work it out where I get one of my players 100 different deals worth $599 each? Now, that is clearly in violation of the spirit of the rule. If this were the NBA, we would call that salary cap circumvention. But it might be a way to get in the gray area and find a loophole here. So I think, to circle back to Hunter, he is hearing a lot of these same stories I'm hearing, where coaches and staffs are operating with no regard for what the house settlement suggests the rules ought to be, and also trying to figure out ways around the rules, even if they are accepting of what they are. And the suggestion, again, was if we don't start doing that, we've got big problems. Maybe we should. And I just thought it was fascinating. In a world where college administrators have for decades constantly talked about the importance of following the rules and, quote, doing things the right way, here we are in September 2025, less than 3 months after a settlement was approved designed to improve college athletics, and we quite literally have a Power Conference athletic director saying, I don't know that my school can win if we follow the rules because nobody else seems to be doing it. That's a really interesting place to be and an indication that we're not in a good place.
I've sat on that stage with Hunter before at these luncheons and asked him the questions, and I've always gotten the feeling that he likes to use these to maybe create a bigger discussion, to get people talking about something to where maybe something does change. Is there any chance you think what he said earlier this week creates, you know, larger discussion among whoever's in charge of rule enforcement now?
Absolutely. And if I'm being honest with you, I don't think the rules as we know them right now are going to remain in place for a long time, because they're obviously problematic. And this is why when I was writing columns about this back in June, I would consistently ask what I thought were totally reasonable questions that people did not have good answers for. In other words, they say, okay, here's the rules now. Every athletic department can spend up to $21.5 million on student athletes. That's the revenue sharing aspect of this. And you can spend that money however you want. And NIL deals, anything above $600, they now have to be approved on a case-by-case basis. Those are the rules. Well, here was my very obvious questions that nobody gave good answers for. If the entire reason there had to be a house settlement is because student athletes were suing the NCAA because the NCAA was trying to limit what it is they could earn, which under former rules was zero, nothing other than a scholarship and a cost of attendance stipend. If we had to end up in courts and settle lawsuits for ungodly amounts of money because the NCAA was trying to limit what student athletes could make, how are we not going to end up at the exact same place when the NCAA or this new entity tries to limit what student athletes can make? Because if a company wants to give you $3 million to represent them, and this entity comes in and says, we don't believe it's a legitimate marketing deal, we deny that, you can't have it, you are limiting what a student athlete can earn. And I don't know why you wouldn't end up right back in court, because these rules were never collectively bargained. The student athletes did not agree to them. So that was a question nobody had good answers for. And here was another one. We've had rules that limited what you could do to secure the services of athletes. We've had them for decades. And every year, college coaches were trying to break them. Head coaches, assistant coaches, boosters. We know that people cheated nonstop. So now you think people are going to follow these rules? No. We're right back to where we were before we basically had no rules for a handful of years. You've created rules that are just going to be broken. And now here we are in September of 2025 with an athletic director suggesting, yeah, that's exactly right. We have rules now. People are breaking them, and I think maybe we need to as well. So do I think Hunter's comments can start a bigger conversation? Yes, I think they are. The idea that you and I are talking about this right now is evidence that it has started a bigger conversation, but they are going to have to change the rules eventually, because once you get it to a place where some Big E schools, like by definition, don't have to spend a penny on football, but obviously every SEC school has to spend the bulk of their money on football. If you play strictly by the rules as they're written right now, there is going to be a recruiting battle between a Big E school, let's just say St. John's, and an SEC school, let's just say Arkansas. And based on the rules, St. John's should have more money available to offer this young person than Arkansas should have available to offer this young person, because St. John's doesn't have to pay football players. It can spend an inordinate amount of money on men's basketball that Arkansas, relative to the rules as they're written right now, should not be able to spend. So the point I've been making for a long time now is, how long do you think that's going to hold up? Do you really think John Calipari or Bruce Pearl or Nate Oates or any SEC coach is going to sit there handcuffed in a recruiting battle because by the rules they can't offer as much money as Creighton or Providence or Seton Hall? Absolutely not. The same goes for the Big Ten. So we're going to rewrite all these rules. And I think Hunter's comments earlier this week, at least will play a role in us, enhancing the conversation, making it a little louder, and making fans, I think, and other people involved in the sport understand that maybe you didn't like the wild, wild west aspect of where we were, where NIL deals were whatever you wanted them to be, and really the player did go in many cases to the highest bidder. Maybe you didn't like that, but at least we knew what the score was. If a young man went to Kansas State for $2 million, we knew that he went to Kansas State for $2 million. I preferred that more than I preferred this, because this is just going to lead to more under the table cheating. And that's what Hunter was referencing on Monday.
One more for you, Gary, before we get you out of here. Arkansas is coming to Memphis. I'm not talking about football this weekend. I'm talking about next month basketball game at FedEx Forum, an exhibition game. There are a lot of people, and I don't know what the feeling is there in Memphis, but a lot of people who would like to see Arkansas-Memphis get back to kind of an annual or at least a routine matchup like it was in the 1990s. Any chance you think that with Calipari here at Arkansas now that might happen, which is ironic because he's the one who ended the series in the first place?
Totally up to John. Whatever John wants to do, we'll get done. Trust me, if Arkansas wants to play Memphis every year in basketball, Penny Hardaway, Ed Scott, the athletic director at Memphis, and Memphis fans would be on board with that in a second. John was asked about it when he was here in Memphis a few weeks back, and he just sort of said, hey, let's do this first thing first and then see where it goes. But, I mean, I'm not just somebody who covers college basketball. I'm somebody who covers college basketball but grew up in the Memphis area. I grew up on the Razorbacks and the Tigers. Like, I grew up on Nolan Richardson and Mike Anderson coming into Memphis and recruiting the high schools and getting players and taking them back across the river and quite literally winning a national championship with them. And I remember, like, it was a fun rivalry and amazing games. And obviously John now being the coach at Arkansas after having previously been the coach at Memphis would add another interesting dynamic to it. So I guess I'm skeptical that we'll ever get there because I don't know if John would want to do that every single year, but it is in his hands. It's up to him. And I would love to see him agree to do it because I think it'd be great for both fan bases. And honestly, I think it'd be wonderful for John to come back here every other year, because though that's not something I would have said 5 years ago or 10 years ago because the feelings were different then, I do think a lot of the hurt and disappointment and whatever else has subsided in recent years, perhaps because he kind of got nudged out of Kentucky a little bit. And I just think Memphis fans are in a different place now. John's in a different place now. And it's going to be a really sweet night, I hope. And I do think when he brings them here for an exhibition, and if that moment can lead to him wanting to come back here more often, trust me, everybody in Memphis would sign up for that in a heartbeat.
Gary, you do a great job. Hopefully we can get you back on here in a couple of months once basketball season starts to talk about Calipari's team.
I would love to do that anytime. I'm right here, buddy. I appreciate you having me.
All right. Thank you, Gary. Thanks to Gary Parrish from CBS for being with us. You can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. We've got analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Anthony Christensen's in studio with me now. We'll continue our basketball conversation because the Razorback basketball schedule dropped yesterday. We knew all of the non-conference games. We'd found those out through various reports, contracts that we've uncovered. The big news yesterday, was that Arkansas is going to play that Arkansas is going to play Cincinnati in an exhibition game on October 24th. That's going to be a nighttime exhibition on a Friday night. And then the next day, there's going to be an early football game on campus against Auburn. So kind of like the KU deal last year.
Mm-hmm. Yep, going to have to get your coffee ready, I think. Because the late basketball, early football transition is hard for me personally. But I digress. It'll be a good litmus test, I think. I mean, Cincinnati obviously is a Big 12 program, and coming off of a disappointing season, you know, Cincinnati was really expected to be something last year, and it just wasn't, to be quite frank. You know, they had a roster that was largely, you know, carried over from the season before, in which Cincinnati made the NIT, and then they finished 19-16 and missed postseason altogether. And I mean, I'm sure they could have gone to the NIT again, but they probably rejected the invitation. But yeah, now it's kind of show and tell, and for Wes Miller there, I think this is a big year for him as a coach at Cincinnati. You know, how much or how hot is that seat going to be? I think everybody kind of going into the season knows that to some degree it's at least warm. So it's it'll be a good litmus test, I think, for both teams. You know, Arkansas coming into to this game, going straight into it with another power conference team and a capable power conference team. I mean, you got guys like Day-Day Thomas on the other side, Jalen Celestine, I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, Sincere Harris, et cetera. You know, capable players, Kirk Creasa, who transferred over from Kentucky. You know, right off the bat, going straight into it, you know, in your first, you know, game, you know, I know it's an exhibition, it doesn't count, but it'll be a good test, I think, for both sides. And, you know, for I know I'm an Arkansas reporter, but I'm kind of more interested, not more interested, but you know what I mean. I'm interested to see, you know, Cincinnati kind of coming into a year in which it, you know, it really needs to do something in order to, you know, show the signs of life in the program and show that Wes Miller is still, you know, the guy for that job.
I was looking up there to see if the John Calipari bobblehead that we've added back here to the shelf was agreeing with you.
Oh, yeah, there he is.
Yeah, he wasn't moving.
He's making fun of my hair.
We've added several bobbleheads in here. We've got Coach Cal, got Eric Musselman, John McDonald back there, Gary Blair, Courtney Dieffel over my shoulder. I think we got Norm DeBryan, Andrew Benintendi, Kevin Kopp. So we're trying to see how many
I think you got them in order.
Did I?
I think so.
Okay.
Did you say Benintendi or Copps first?
I don't remember.
Oh, okay. Well, neither do I.
I don't remember. Benintendi played before Copps. I know that. Well. Yeah, we're trying to see how many different bobbleheads we can find with Fayetteville ties here.
Maybe I should get my own bobblehead.
Yeah. Oh, we got the Lou Holtz doll back up there too.
Oh yeah, the one that. Yeah.
Much to Sydney's chagrin. I don't think she likes the Lou Holtz doll.
If I woke up and I saw that thing looking at me, I'd be.
You know, the only thing we're missing is it used to have glasses. I don't know where the glasses went on him, but he's still got the sweater, the plaid pants. he's rocking up there. So here's the schedule. If you haven't seen it, I'll just read it for you. Of course, they're going to play, as we talked with Gary Parrish about, they're going to play Memphis over at FedEx Forum in an exhibition game.
That'll be
fun. On October 27th. The regular season begins on November 3rd. That's a Monday against Southern. That's the first night they can play a game. That'll be at Bud Walton. That Saturday, November 8th, they'll go to Michigan State. They'll come back to Bud Walton. They'll play several games in a row on campus. November 11th against UCA. November 14th against Samford. November 18th against Winthrop. And November 21st against Jackson State. Then you get into the games that people really are talking about. Thanksgiving against Duke at United Center in Chicago. They come back to Bud Walton. They'll play December 3rd against Louisville as part of the SEC-ACC Challenge. December 6th, that's a Saturday. They will go down to North Little Rock to take on Fresno State December 13th. That's a Saturday. Texas Tech in Dallas at American Airlines Center. They'll come back to Fayetteville December 16th against Queens at Bud Walton. December 20th, another Saturday. You see a pattern here. A lot of Saturdays in December, they're going to be at neutral sites. They'll take on Houston in Newark, New Jersey at the Prudential Center. That's where the New Jersey Devils hockey team plays. Nothing says Southwest Conference like Arkansas and Houston in New York in December, but that's what's going to happen. And then December 29th, James Madison will be the last non-conference opponent. That'll be on a Monday at Bud Walton, and then they will start SEC play that weekend with Tennessee and Fayetteville.
Yeah, it's a good schedule. It's a fun schedule, I think. When you count the SEC play as well, you know, Arkansas is going to be playing against each of last season's Elite Eight, so it's going to be there's a lot of good teams on the schedule, even those who didn't make the Elite Eight last year. You know, Louisville made the tournament. You know, there's you know, a lot of hype around James Madison and as a mid-major. That's a fun game as well, just for I'm sure for John Calipari, because Preston's
where Vanderbilt's coach had come from, right?
Yes, yeah, that's where Mark Byington went to Vanderbilt from there, but also Preston Spradlin, the current coach there, is a member of the John Calipari coaching tree. He worked for him at Kentucky, if I'm not mistaken. So that'll be a fun one. Queens is a first year full time Division I member. And won 20 games last year. Obviously everybody's going to be looking at, Duke and Louisville, and Michigan State on the road will be a lot of fun going up to the Izzone. And, Houston's obviously probably willing to bet at this point that Houston's going to be the preseason number one team in the country in the AP poll. I'm personally right now leaning towards putting Houston at number one, or Purdue at number one, excuse me. But I obviously understand why it's going to be Houston. But I mean, you got Duke, Louisville, Houston, Michigan State, all these very good teams that are going to be Texas Tech. How could I gloss over that one? But there's a lot to like, and then even some of these bye games. Obviously, I mentioned James Madison and Queens, but you've got Samford, that's very good. Lenny Acuff is the coach there now. He coached Lipscomb last year, got them to the tournament, and now takes over at Samford for Bucky McMillan. Bucky McMillan now at Texas A&M. Yeah, so Samford should be good. They like playing against Lenny Acuff, it seems. He's a good coach. They've got Central Arkansas again, UCA. I'm intrigued to see what they are in year two under John Shulman. Southern won the regular season SWAC title last year, and there's a lot to like about Winthrop and Jackson State. I'm not sure that those teams are going to be atop their respective conferences, but. There's a lot to like about this schedule, and should be one that gets them ready for SEC play. And I think it tells you that the coaching staff is confident about where this team is.
I want to say something here. The AP football poll has come under attack in the last week over people not paying enough attention. Anthony is our AP basketball voter, and if you can't tell, the guy pays attention. It's a little bit different for basketball because you do get to see.
Yeah, it's like it's throughout the day
and football,
more, and then it's throughout the week as well.
Football, so you might get a Thursday night or a Friday night game where you get to see a ranked team or a team that you think might ought to be ranked. But it is harder because everybody's playing on Saturday. In basketball, you get to see a lot more.
Yeah, throughout the week, and basketball games on average are don't take up as much time as football games, so. I leave Bud Walton Arena, and then I go back to my apartment and I start watching more basketball. So, but I mean, I keep seeing all this AP poll vitriol online, and I'm like, man, I better not mess up a ballot this year. people are paying attention, but no, I mean, I update my personal top 25, my personal top 50, every day throughout the season. So.
I've
updated it quite a bit over the summer. I keep changing my mind. I've had St. John's up at like 3, then down to like 9, then back up to 5. It's like, I can't.
When does the AP basketball poll come out? The preseason poll?
I believe it's the October 14th or 19th.
Okay. So it's coming
soon. One of those days. Yeah, I got the email, and then I tried to get onto the poll website, and it wasn't open yet because I wanted to make sure that I didn't forget to do it later. But no, it'll be relatively soon. Yes. I don't remember the exact date, but I'll be sure to get that on there. And I'm sure I'll write like a 45,000 word explanation about why I voted the way I did.
Ask somebody else to edit that, please. don't want to edit that book. Seeing Cal and Mus up there, I was thinking about in terms of scheduling, we're starting to get a feel for what Calipari's schedules look like. And they're different than Musselman's schedules. Mm-hmm. Musselman was real big on going to places like Maui and going to where'd they go a couple of years ago?
Atlantis.
Yeah, Battle for Atlantis.
Just before my time.
Yeah. But, you know, they that's where they get their opponents. Cal is much bigger into these one-off games.
Yeah, the neutral sites.
Playing at Madison Square Garden or playing at the Prudential Center or wherever. And the other thing that I noticed is that it seems like Calipari is much more willing to schedule, like, the brand name power conference opponents. Mm-hmm. The Texas Techs, the Michigan States. They're supposed to play Baylor this year. Baylor backed out. Whereas Musselman, it felt like where they were really, not to say they weren't playing those teams, but they were playing them more kind of as luck of the draw if they were going to be in one of those tournaments they're in. His schedules were more about, hey, let's see if we can, gosh, I don't even know a team. Let's see if Lipscomb's really good this year. Mm-hmm. You know, like, are they going to win their conference?
Are you asking finding right
the
now,
mid? No, what I'm saying is like that was what the question was. Finding those teams that they felt were going to compete really well in a mid-major conference and that would look good on the resume, mm-hmm. that would probably be a win, but would look good on the resume once March or Selection Sunday rolled around.
I, for the record, I think Lipscomb might struggle a little bit with how late Lenny Acuff
left.
Please
stop.
But
just stop.
No, I would agree with you there. I think it's you know, it's a good schedule, like we mentioned. I think there's a lot to be excited about, and I think it's a schedule that you know, I think it gets you ready for SEC play, or at least, you know, that's obviously going to be the hope with any non-conference schedule. But, you know, I never got to cover a single Eric Musselman non-conference game, so it's a little hard for me to, like, compare and contrast just because it was a little bit before my time. But yeah, you know, with regard to this schedule, you know, there's a lot to like, and you know, I know John Calipari is not a huge fan of going to, you know, say Maui or Atlantis or wherever it may be for, you know, those MTEs, which
they are scheduled to go to Maui for now.
Stay in Maui, please.
In 2027.
Please, do you know?
For now,
man. Writing that they're backing out of Maui story is going to hurt my soul.
If they do,
we don't know that they're going to.
But Calipari, for those who don't know, Calipari has been on record when he was at Kentucky saying he did not like the Maui Invitational. Not that he didn't like the tournament, but didn't like what the travel did to the team at that point in the season.
I'm just saying, I think it's worth it for me personally.
I mean, they never. I think after like 2010, they never played in any type of early season event again.
Here you go, ruining my hopes. And come on,
we'll see.
Come on, just let me dream.
We'll see if they hang in there. All right, you can.
I was just gonna say, thoughts? No, it's a fun schedule. I think it's especially those exhibitions. You know, Cincinnati, Memphis. You know, I know Memphis isn't a power conference team, but it operates on a power conference level, if we're being fully honest with ourselves, mm-hmm. especially on the men's basketball side. But, you know, it's a good schedule, even including those exhibitions. So I'm excited to see how it all, you know, comes together.
I like the fact that the exhibition games now are, number one, they're televised. But,
yes.
But number two, that they are quality enough that TV wants to pick them up.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they're not playing East Central Oklahoma State anymore, and only their radio station.
Let's respect
that. There was a game. there was an exhibition game. It's been 4 or 5 years ago where they came over. They played Arkansas. Arkansas didn't have it on radio because I think there was a football game that weekend, so it would have been a really tough turnaround. And the only way you could find out what was going on at the game, unless you were there, was tuning into this little AM radio station that actually brought their announcer over. And it turned out to be like this really close game, like a 3-point game or a 5-point game, something like that, down to the wire type deal. None of that anymore. Really quality matchups in the preseason. Mm-hmm. I do like that has changed in college basketball over the last few years.
And it's nice that, you know, some of them, a lot of them are, you know, they've got the charitable aspects of it as well, like the proceeds from the Memphis game going to St. Mm-hmm. Jude and everything. So obviously that's kind of a side story, but, you know, especially from our perspective writing about sports, but it is a nice thing that they do.
And you can read Anthony's basketball coverage at our website, wholehogsports.com. When we come back, Jonah Dillon from the Memphis Commercial Appeal will join us to talk about this weekend's football game. But first, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. Jonah Dillon covers Memphis for the Commercial Appeal newspaper, and he joins us now. Jonah, what's the feeling over there for this weekend's game?
Yeah, people are really excited. I mean, this is the first Power Conference opponent Memphis has hosted since 2021. And anytime Memphis gets to play a Power Conference opponent, it's a big deal. Obviously, being at home is a whole other level. And with the, you know, the regionality with Arkansas, the fact that these two teams haven't played in so long, people are really excited. They've had this one circled on the calendar for quite a while.
What do you think you've learned about Memphis football team through these first 3 weeks?
Yeah, not a lot. I mean, the level of competition has made it hard, right? I mean, it hasn't really been, aside from the first half against Georgia State, which kind of, you know, there were some quarterback things going on there with Georgia State, it hasn't been a lot of resistance, especially against Troy. And so we've learned that the defense is solid. Obviously, they're going to face a much tougher test this week. And we've learned, I think, offensively, the way that Memphis wants to play. And the way Memphis wants to play is to establish the running game, which is different than it has been in years past. Comes down to having a new quarterback in Brendan Lewis, who's a dual threat guy who wants to run, wants to get on the outside, and then a really strong running back room. And I think we've learned that Memphis is going to approach every game trying to run the ball and establish the run. And even if they don't have to the entire game, I think that's going to be the game plan coming out against Arkansas.
As an assistant coach or a head coach, Ryan Silverfield has been part of Memphis teams that have beaten Ole Miss and beaten Mississippi State. I think both of those games were there in Memphis. Does that play any factor at all, you think, going into this game, just in terms of he knows how to prepare for an SEC team and have success from that?
Yeah, they've done really well the past couple of years against Power Conference opposition, right? In bowl games, two straight wins over Power Conference teams in bowl games. They went and played Missouri pretty close a couple of years ago, and that Missouri team obviously turned out to be pretty good. And so I think there's been a lot of confidence they've taken from how they've competed against those teams. They're not going to be worried about, oh man, we're playing SEC, we've got to play totally differently. They're confident in their ability. And look, they've won a lot of games over the past couple of years. So I think that they feel good going into this game, and they feel like what they've done, not just this year, but over the past couple of years, has kind of set themselves up to be able to play in these types of games.
Harold Grader, who's with the Liberty Bowl, as you know, he likes to say that Memphis is just kind of an extension of Arkansas. Arkansas has gone over there for the bowl game a number of times. Big crowds have been there for those pro-Arkansas crowds. What do you think it's going to look like in the stands this weekend?
That's a really good question. I'm interested to see, because we know Arkansas fans will travel, and Memphis is kind of in a weird situation with the stadium right now, where it's still under renovation. Mm-hmm. So one side of the stadium is kind of off right now while they're building something new. And so I would expect, they haven't had a full stadium since they started those renovations last year. I would expect it to be that or close to that. But yeah, like you said, there's going to be a lot of red in the stands. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what the split turns out being with how many Arkansas fans make the trip and then how many Memphis fans decide to come out because it's such a big game.
Tell me about Sutton Smith and what's made him so effective this year. I saw where he was the Paul Hornung National Player of the Week for the second time.
Yeah, he's somebody, so he's been someone with Memphis. Fans have been really excited about him since he got here and has not really played a big role until this year, both because he was a backup and then last year was kind of set up to take a big step and tears his ACL in the first quarter of the first game. Mm-hmm. So he spent the entire offseason getting ready for this moment. He hasn't really played football since 2 years ago until the beginning of this season. And he's somebody, when you talk about highlight reel players, Sutton Smith is at the top of the list. Every time he touches the ball, you got to kind of stop what you're doing and get ready for something crazy to happen. He's shown that multiple times. And he's also gotten a lot better, I think, this season at those, you know, runs between the tackles, things that are not necessarily flashy, because in the past, that was kind of the knock against him was, yeah, you can do crazy stuff in space, but can he turn a 1 yard run into a 4 yard run? And it's been interesting because Memphis is, you know, went into the season with Sutton Smith and Greg DeLozier. Greg DeLozier actually has the starting running back, both of them kind of dynamic running backs. Greg DeLozier gets injured in the first game, so Sutton Smith has had to be the featured back the first couple of games, and he's done an incredible job in that role so far.
The quarterback who came over from Nevada, Brendan Lewis, what has he added to this offense?
Yeah, it's the running ability. That's the main thing. Memphis had Seth Hennigan for 4 years, and he was really good, set basically all of Memphis's program records, but he was not a running-type quarterback. And now you've got Brendan Lewis, and you've got this really deep and talented running back room, and so that means the most dangerous play Memphis can run is like a zone read, because there's so many things that can happen from that. And I think with Brendan Lewis, the question is, if they end up in a game, and it could happen this weekend, where Memphis has to score quickly, has to throw the ball down the field a lot, will they be able to do that? And will these receivers be able to make those types of plays down the field? We've seen a little bit of deep shot passing, but not a lot, because like I said, there hasn't been resistance to the running game. And so that'll be a question, is how does that work going down the field if they need to do that?
You know, Arkansas played Arkansas State 2 weeks ago over in Little Rock, and Memphis is a better program than Arkansas State is, but you saw a real contrast in the type of athletes. Do you think Memphis has the type of athletes that can keep up with an SEC team?
Yeah, I don't think they have the type of athletes that are necessarily on that level, but I think that they can keep up with it. Like I said, the past couple of years, I think when you see Memphis play against those types of teams, mm-hmm. you can tell that there's a different level, but at the same time, they're really confident in their ability and the way that Memphis has been recruiting over the past couple of years. Yeah, they're not getting SEC type players, but they're doing pretty well. They're beating, you know, power conference teams for recruits pretty consistently. Mm-hmm. And so that leads to a situation where, yeah, you might need to adjust some things in terms of the physicality, but I don't think they're going to get run off the field or anything because of that.
But there's 77 new players on this year's team. Is it a more athletic team than last year's? Is it comparable to last year's, the team that did beat Florida State and played those games that you're talking about?
Yeah, I would say athleticism and speed. Those are the two things that they have, especially on defense. You look at, like, they were good on defense last year in terms of compared to the year before, and they had a lot of talented guys, particularly in the linebacker room. But now you look at the defense, you look at the receiver room last year, some really good receivers. I wouldn't say that speed and athleticism were necessarily the standout things, and now it is. So I think they've kind of ramped up the level of athlete, and now they got to make sure it all kind of works together because, like you said, so many new players – they haven't really been tested yet, and this is going to be the first time to see how that really plays out.
You know, the guarantee payments that the group of five, group of six teams get for the games when they go on the road, those are real big to their program. Memphis gives up a guarantee by getting Arkansas to come over there and play a game this week. How big of a deal is that to Memphis to be able to have an SEC team? I know you touched on this at the start, but maybe go a little bit more in detail how important it is for Memphis to get an SEC caliber program on its campus.
It's really important, especially when you look at what the future is going to be, right? With the 9-game SEC schedule, we already know that the Arkansas game that was supposed to be next year in Fayetteville has been moved. But I think even when you look at long-term scheduling for Memphis with power conference teams and SEC teams, it's going to get a lot harder to schedule those types of games, whether it's a home and home or a 2-for-1 or whatever it is, just because now SEC teams, they have one less option in terms of scheduling every single year. And it was already difficult for Memphis to get a lot of these games on the schedule. The only way they got the Arkansas game was with this 2-for-1. And so I think they don't know, you know, you're going to this weekend, Memphis has Mississippi State for a home and home a couple years down the road. That's the only other power conference team that's currently on the schedule for any year. And there's a lot of fans around Memphis saying, like, I don't know how many more times we're going to get to see an SEC team come play in Memphis just for all these reasons. And because of that, this game feels like a big deal, because if you're a Memphis fan, you're coming to the game saying, like, this is really cool. I get to see an SEC team come play against the Tigers, but we don't know how many more of these we're going to see in the future.
A couple, 3 years ago, whenever they first announced the plans to renovate the stadium there in Memphis, I think the goal was to have it finished by the start of the 25 season, and it would be ready to show off for this game against Arkansas. Obviously, that's not going to be the case. Have they hit delays? What's caused maybe this to not get finished as quickly as first thought?
Yeah, so this was the process with the stadium was ongoing for a long time, and the big kind of hiccup was funding, which obviously usually is when it comes to these stadium projects. And when they had originally hoped to start construction, they hadn't even figured out the funding by that point. They didn't get this all kind of finalized until right at the end of 2023, when they had hoped to have shovels in the ground, like the week that, the deal was being made. So ultimately, by the time they started doing, broke ground and started doing all that stuff, it had delayed past the original point. Even though they did end up getting all the money, thanks to a bunch of different kind of people coming through with a deal. And they knew when they started construction that this game, that it wouldn't be done by this game, which obviously you would think if it was a full stadium and everything was done, they would be close, maybe not fill the stadium, but they'd be close because they would, a lot of Arkansas fans obviously would want to travel. And you're talking about a capacity at that point in the 40,000s. And if you've watched Memphis play over the past couple of years, it's not often that we see a full stadium mm-hmm. at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. So that would have been a big deal. I think we'll see a full stadium on Saturday, but obviously it won't be at full capacity because of the renovations. It's kind of a weird situation. They didn't want to give up the game. They didn't want to move it, which Hunter Yurecek had suggested at one point. And so here they are. It's going to be an interesting atmosphere.
I've always thought the football makeup of Memphis, and I'm talking about the city of Memphis, has been interesting. Like, many years ago, Ron Higgins covered SEC football from Memphis, which I thought told you kind of how much of a melting pot that city was. Kind of for people who don't live there, explain all of the teams, because it seems like Memphis is very much a split town in terms of which teams it supports.
Yeah, because it's really interesting. As Memphis is right in the middle of SEC country, right? And obviously, there's a lot of different people in Memphis who are fans of different programs. Ole Miss is the closest one, mm-hmm. But obviously, University of Tennessee has a campus here, and so there's a lot of Tennessee fans in Memphis, a lot of Arkansas fans, I would say, and you end up with this kind of juxtaposition of you could go to a bar and have half people rooting for Mississippi State, half people rooting for Tennessee, whatever it is. And then you've got Memphis fans who hate all those fans. They're anti pretty much every SEC school, especially the ones that are close. And it's one of those things with Memphis fans where if you ask 10 different Memphis fans who their biggest rival was, you probably get different answers. Mm. And a lot of them would be some of those SEC teams. So they feel some type of way about it. Tennessee would probably be at the top of the list for most people. But that's another example of Memphis fans would love to play Tennessee in a football game, mm-hmm. but it's not happening. And so those are the types of things where it becomes an interesting dynamic of you've got people who are fans of these SEC teams, then you've got Memphis fans who are obviously against them, but some of these schools are, they're really close. You can drive to games at all these different SEC schools. So it's a really interesting dynamic.
Jonah, good stuff. Nice talking to you, and hope to see you this weekend.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. Jonah Dillon of the Memphis Commercial Appeal. Appreciate him being here. And we appreciate all of you being on the show with us today. Hope that we see you again on our show tomorrow or at our website, wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everybody.